Welcome to the first episode of Super Sumo Brothers Podcast. I'm Mike. And I'm here with Andrew, and we're gonna just kind of recap a little bit about, you know, where's the state of sumo now and the last couple of tournaments, and, you know, kind of segue into this current tournament. So usually the tournament is held in Nagoya, but because of COVID and everything going on, they've moved everything to Tokyo. Do you think that's a good move, Andy? Like, I don't know. I have mixed feelings because I feel like Tokyo is, like, you know, the metropolis of Japan, essentially. I feel like there's more people there.
I think if you're trying to prevent the spread, I guess trying to keep everything centralized, because the main concern was with the Rikishi traveling going to all these other locations where with Tokyo, it's, you know, it's the center point of sumo in Japan. And they have a system in place. They can, you know, they have their transportation. You know, most of the stables are in the Tokyo area.
Yeah, anyways. The stables have to be in the Tokyo area, right? I believe is the rule.
So, yeah. So when they do visit the other cities, they do have, like, some practice areas. Each stable has their own. But yeah, mainly their HQ is in Tokyo. So I think it's easier just to contain them in their own stables if they just keep them in Tokyo.
Like, typically it's like every other month it's in a different spot. So there's, you know, September would have traditionally been in Tokyo, which it's going to be, and November would have been in Fukuoka, for example. And if you're interested in, like, the way the sumo tournaments work, I highly recommend you check out the NHK World website. If you just type in NHK sumo into Google, you'll get they have a really good sumopedia. They explain everything, all the rules, all the traditions, why they're located in certain places. It goes into way more detail than we're going to go here. So if you're interested in that, definitely check that out. I like your point of, I'd actually honestly completely forgotten that all the stables are located in Tokyo. So that makes a lot of sense that they would kind of keep it there.
Like I said, I think it's a good idea just for them to try and keep them all contained and to do, you know, to try and keep them within their own stable, which is interesting because one of the big things I think that came from this was how they were going to train. Because typically they would travel to other stables and practice with others because when you practice with each other, you kind of get to know each other very well. They're very, very close-knit stable there. It's a family, you know, they train together, they eat together. And so getting to train with other stables, you have to actually compete against others. So with COVID happening, they had to stay with their stables this time around, but without COVID, they would be off training with other stables, you know, closer to the tournaments. And then they would be doing the road shows too. Typically they, like, in the off months, so every even month this time around, they'd go to other cities and display, you know, tournaments or these little 1 or 2 day shows. Those have obviously been canceled with COVID, but trying to keep it right in the Tokyo, I think, was important to at least try and get some sumo going since it was canceled.
And like the comparison I'm like making in my head is like, imagine if, you know, again, since we're in the Boston area here, imagine if the Patriots just played the Patriots all the time and then all of a sudden had to play, you know, the Colts or something when they were legitimate, you know, like,
yeah, exactly.
like it would just be, you know, you're only as good as, you know, your best player at that point. So I think we'll kind of get into this later, but I think that gives the houses that have a lot of wrestlers in them in the upper ranks a bigger advantage than, we'll say, like Hakuho's stable, you know, where he's basically fighting Enho.
There's Ishiura, there's a couple other guys that are up there with him, but and you know, they've mentioned that you know, Enho is very undersized. Ishiura is also very small. They're quick and very technical, but I think Hakuho needs to face guys that are a little bit bigger. And I think that's what traveling to other stables would have given him, was the ability to fight these larger individuals who might be able to match up with him. But there are others in his stable that can, but for a standpoint of someone who's higher up, and usually, you know, fighting Hakuho is an honor sometimes too when they travel to these tournaments. So not only do these individuals who get to fight with him lose that honor, or not even lose the honor, but they don't get a chance to fight him, but Hakuo doesn't get a chance to, you know, teach them essentially, because he's the best.
If you're gonna learn from anybody, it must.
Yeah, no, he's definitely the most technical. You know, he's really able to improvise on the spot. He's not.
If you're new to sumo, highly recommend Hakuho, Hakuho. Google that, and you will find out that this man is the greatest sumo wrestler in history, I think, at this point.
Yeah, I would definitely give him that title.
He's broken almost every single wrestling record in sumo ever at this point. I'm sure there's a few here or there, but so him just being limited to his own stable or house, as it's known in sumo, I think is kind of a disadvantage, but we'll see. I mean, we'll see if the goat can keep it going. So January Basho was interesting, though. Speaking of Hakuho and Kakaru, or at least Hakuho, Tokushoru won.
Mm-hmm.
The lowest rank wrestler the first wrestler in 20 years to win at the lowest rank.
Yeah,
which was Magashira 17.
Yeah, I believe it was 17.
That tournament.
Which traditionally, and here's another you know, point to make is when rankings come out, typically the top rank only goes to 16 is usually where they try and keep it, so they break it into east and west, obviously, and they usually try and go with 16. But these last couple tournaments with individuals in the Juryo division fighting better, and some of the ones in the Makuchi, you know, fighting not poorly but potentially breaking even, they've added like a 17th and 18th rank. So for Tokushoru to end up in that rank and win it, like I said, it was something to see, because he was actually the lowest ranked wrestler, and we've had this discussion too on where we've even looked at like strength of schedule. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, for locals where it's like, oh, the Patriots have the easiest schedule, come on, it's a piece of cake, where we looked at you know, these lower ranked guys, and they traditionally fight people within, you know, a 5 to 8 rank range,
like a plus or minus 5 to 8, I would say.
And depending on where you are, so he was at the bottom, he's fighting everyone who's better than him in rank. But usually late in the tournament, if he's performing well, they'll throw him up against the big dog. They'll give him a Hakuho, you know, they'll give him a Kakaru, these Yokozuna. We've always had this discussion on whether or not like someone that low ranks should win, but I'm glad. I actually liked seeing that. It was kind of cool to see a pretty much an underdog come into the tournament and win.
Yeah, it was definitely unexpected, I would say, for sure. And like the way the ranking system works, just to kind of give a comparison to you know, we're in America, so it's obviously easier to do an American comparison, but it's kind of like the ranking system works similar to that of like the NCAA, where it's like based on your performance in the tournament or your season, you get placed in a ranking system, and then you play, you know, you fight people of that kind of level. And every couple months there's a Banzuke which comes out, which is, you could picture it as like a fight card. And the fighters, you know, will fight plus or minus their rank, you know, and to try and get over the course of 15 days the most wins that they can get. So in this case, this man was, Tokushoru was the lowest rank possible, and ended up winning. Which is obviously incredibly rare, since it was the first time it happened in 20 years.
Yeah, he went 14-1, which is a near-perfect record.
Right, perfect, right, near-perfect record, yeah. Mm-hmm. But the important things to take away from this, though, is the two Yokozuna pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
So both Hakuho, who we've been talking about, is probably the greatest sumo wrestler of all time, and Kakaru, who's the his counterpart there, there's two Yokozuna at this point in time in sumo. They both pulled out. I don't exactly remember the injuries.
I don't remember either.
But Hakuho had been kind of shaky leading up to this tournament anyway, if I'm remembering correctly. He had pulled out for a variety of reasons, and hadn't the tournament before in November he may have finished.
Yeah, so in November he was 14-1. He took the Yusho, but like, mm-hmm. yeah, in September he was 0-2-13 withdraws.
Yep.
And then So, but yeah, usually if he has a bad start, it's typically due to injury. He fights through most things, and I'll give him credit for that. Like I said, he's
one of
the best, and he'll fight through injuries. But he looked better in March. And you know, heads up, you know, we should have mentioned that there could be spoilers involved for, you know, the current tournament. So if you don't want spoilers,
yeah, we'll give you a couple seconds to turn it off. If you don't want spoilers,
go tune into at least day two. But so far it's expected that he's performing well, for the 2 days, you know, he's 2-0. So, you know, he typically goes with at least 13 wins is his average. He's got a lot of perfect U shows, perfect tournament wins.
But, so what's kind of what I was just thinking about now, and I know we've talked about this before, is like it's, and I know I'm not a huge fan of him just like pulling out of a tournament when he doesn't feel right, but because he clearly has, like he'll do two or three fights, and then when he's lost a couple in a row, he'll just pull out, and you know, he can do that because he's a Yokozuna. To briefly touch on that, there's certain stipulations with each rank when you can fight and when you can't. Like if you pull out of a tournament, if you're any other rank than Yokozuna, you're getting demoted or potentially demoted. Again, I recommend checking out NHK's Sumopedia for more details on the actual ranking system and how they work. But yeah, for him to just pull out when he's not feeling right, I wonder if that would be like, because there's a lot of injuries in sumo. Sumo, you see people get hurt, and then we'll kind of get into one of them in a bit. Some people get hurt, and they're never the same, and you never hear from them again. I wonder if it's like, thinking about it now, if it's smarter for Hakuho to just pull out if he knows there's a problem and start recovery early. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think we'll get obviously way more into this, and this is I think a part of sumo as well, but like Takayasu, for example. So in sumo, there's a second rank, and Yokozuna being the top, and then Ozeki's, they have a certain criteria as well, where they need to at least win eight matches a tournament in order to stay at their current rank. That's the same thing with everybody, but if you go back-to-back losing tournaments as an Ozeki, you get demoted down, and getting back into Ozeki is impossible. So we see sometimes where Takayasu might have lost, you know, three of the first five, four of the last first six, and he just decides, you know what, I'm just going to rest for the rest of the tournament. I'm not performing well. I don't want to injure myself further. And he pulls out. So I think Hakuho is smart enough to realize that if he's performing poorly based on injury, it's better just to pull it out, to pull out of the tournament.
Yeah, and leverage that Yokozuna rank for sure.
Correct.
Yeah. And like, they're never going to make Hakuho retire.
Correct. Right, yeah. Now, yeah. Pretty much untouchable. Yeah. The only way I think he would be out of a sport is if he willingly retired. And I know his first goal was he wanted to at least make it through to the 2020 Tokyo Olympics, but obviously those were postponed until 2021. So now the thought is, okay, so he'll get through 2021. What's after that? Because he is 35. He's a little bit older. I mean, there's some vets in here who are, you know, there's a 52-year-old, there's a 41. There's definitely some people who fight forever, but those are much lower ranked individuals. You know, pulling out for injury, I think, is smart if it can save your career. If you're just like, you know, I don't want to hurt myself any further. Yeah. So,
and we'll definitely talk about a former Yokozuna, Kasino Sato, in one of these episodes for sure, and why it may not be super great. to even be at the Yokozuna rank.
Yeah, it's definitely an honor to reach that point, but then the expectation and the performance of that rank is. Is through the roof. Like the way you need to carry yourself, the way you need to perform in the ring, the expectation that you pretty much should be going 15-0. It's a high expectation when you get up there. And like you said, Kasino Sato, we'll get into him. One of my favorite wrestlers.
One of my favorites too.
Yeah. One of the most consistent wrestlers I've seen. And honestly, the only reason I think he didn't win more was because of Hakuho.
I agree. He just ran up against one of the best sumo wrestlers in history.
If you had Kasino Sato come in, you know, a couple years, say, you know, Hakuho wasn't in the picture, Kasino Sato could have won a handful more tournaments. He was very consistent. Yep. He was a great technical fighter. And he made it to Yokozuna, but just due to some injuries and you know, what happened, you know, he had to retire, but there will be more on that, I'm sure, in time.
Yeah, that's I'm still salty about that, but
I am absolutely, because he won back-to-back tournaments and then was injured and just couldn't get back to it, and it was so unfortunate because he was so consistent at Ozeki. Yep. Constantly getting 12 wins.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch him fight. He was a really good wrestler.
Yeah.
But yeah, so again, the reason why I bring this up is Asanoyama, who was Sekiwake at the time, was one of the two upper rank guys that had a like winning record. A lot of the upper rank guys, and I mean from Sekiwake, Kamasubi, Ozeki, and Yokozuna, there was only a couple guys up there that were even had winning records. So how legitimate is you know, Tokushoru's win there? And so we were going to go into March and see, you know, see how that was, you know, how that was going to hold up.
Yeah. And because he was Magashira 17, in January. And I honestly think he got one of the biggest bumps I've ever seen. And it's kind of given where, I mean, he did go 14-1.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where they were like, you know what, we're gonna put you up against the big guys again, but we're gonna give you a huge bump.
But you talked about quality of schedule too, in that, correct, like how many people did he fight that were less than 10, you know, less than Magashira 10?
Yeah, so he did. I think on day 15, if I remember right, he went up against Takakesho, who was Ozeki East at the time. Mm-hmm. And I believe he's still Ozeki, and he beat him. So, I mean, but they did give it to him, like, on day 15, that, hey, this could be a make-or-break moment for you. Yeah. We're going to put you up against I think he was actually, at that point, the highest-ranked guy, because Hakuho and Kakaru pulled out.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So like, imagine if Hakuho or Kakaru were there. That's the question. I think that's where the asterisk comes in. Had one of the Yokozuna been available, it wouldn't have been an Ozeki he was fighting. It would have been a Yokozuna.
And we always have that debate where it's like, when someone wins and Hakuho is not there, it doesn't matter. If a tree falls in the woods and no one's around to hear, it doesn't make a noise.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you look at it and you're like, well, I mean, Hakuho wasn't there. You didn't beat Hakuho, but I still give everyone credit because it's you know, it's the passage of the next generation where you know, just because Hakuho wasn't there, they won, they fought really tough. And maybe, who knows, maybe they would have beat Hakuho if he was there.
Yeah, and to bring it back to, like, you know, our own fandom here with mm-hmm. Koto Shugiku, it's like, you know, I mean, he fought Yokozunas and things like that, but, you know, sometimes you just go on these runs in sumo, it seems like where just for some reason you're feeling it, and mm-hmm. one wrestler can just dominate guys you don't expect them to dominate. It's kind of crazy how that happens, and having watched sumo for this long now, it's I've seen enough of them just kind of get in the groove.
Yeah, you know, and I think that's what it comes down to is really feeling it.
Yeah.
Where, like you said, it's not just
physical, it's mental. It's surprisingly mental, which is crazy.
There's a lot of mental involved, absolutely, where if you're just feeling it on a tournament, whether it's like you got the techniques down, you know, you're getting the mawashi grab early, you know, good tachi eye, like you're getting these good beginnings where you're just like, I'm going to win this match. Yep. And it's impressive. Because when Koto Shikiku, he obviously had to beat Hakuho. Mm-hmm. And that's always my most memorable, because even when he won this 4 years ago, Hakuho was still the GOAT.
Right? Yeah, he was probably arguably better. He was more in the zone then, I feel like, than he is now.
And back then it was winning tournaments 15-0 for like three or four tournaments in a row, going 49-0. Like, he was on a tear. Mm-hmm. And for him to go up against Hakuho and beat him, and that was, once again, a tournament where he was just feeling it physically, mentally. He just he could feel the ring. Everything was going in his way, and it was great to see that. So it really comes down to, and that's what I think what happened with Tokushoru, where he was just feeling it.
Yeah.
Because now in March,
I
think that's when reality kind of hit him. He got bumped all the way up to Magashira 2.
Yeah, went up to Magashira 2. So to give people who may not know, that's like, what, six ranks away from Yokozuna? I mean, granted, there's a long road between Magashira and getting to Yokozuna, but that's near the top, obviously.
Yeah, you're two ranks below. So in further breaking it down, when you get into the Komisubi, Sekiwake, Ozeki, and Yokozuna, that has a subdivision. And it's Senyaku. Mm-hmm. So Tokushoru went up two ranks below this honorable Senyaku division, where you're no longer a Magashira ranked individual. You actually get a separate ranking structure, because before it's just like your Magashira 1 through 18 or 7, you know, 17, whatever the tournament calls for. Yep. So you get up and now you're in like the top four ranks. So he went from bottom of the Banzuke or ranking structure all the way up to 2. So and since it's each side, that's like a bump of like 25, 26 positions. Mm. But yeah, so then he went 4-11.
yeah, 4-11. Yeah, so because again, you're fighting, once you're up that high, you're fighting people that are plus or minus 5 your rank, roughly.
Yeah, he was definitely, he fought Takaho, you know, he fought
Kakaru.
Yeah, Kakaru, he fought Onosho, you know, Tamawashi. There was a wide range of guys that he was fighting, but he fought, when you get that high, you do pretty much end up facing all 8 or more of the top 4 guys, so you will always typically face the 2 Yokozuna, the 2 Ozeki, Komisubi, and the 2 Sekiwake, typically.
Yeah, and I also thought it was kind of interesting that, like, that was, you know, Togashoru's hometown is near Osaka, and that's where the tournament was held, but they had no audience because of COVID, so I wonder how much that actually played into it, like, mentally, again, it being mentally and or mental and physical kind of match every time. I wonder if that kind of played into his head a little bit, like he was expecting all these people to be there to cheer for him. When he got there, he had nothing.
And I think there are some, I think they interviewed a bunch of people afterwards or during the tournament, and some people are motivated by the cheers and the yelling and the screaming, you know, cheering on that wrestler, but some people were like, I like when it was quiet, you know, it's very, I can just kind of get in the zone. But yeah, for him, I mean, it's also unfortunate that he ended up pretty much going home
to
his closest arena and then putting up a 4-11. But I think it's just that huge jump. I think the expectation, or maybe what he was expecting, it just hit him real quick. I mean, he started the tournament, I think he was 0-5 to begin, if I remember right. So
it's almost like they made up for like his fights to win the championship. You know what I mean? They were like, okay, well now you're up here.
Yeah.
And you know, that's, I've noticed that too. In our time watching sumo is like, if they really want you to prove yourself sometimes, they're going to put you in a really rough situation.
But so he ended up facing Hakuho, who went on to win his 44th champion, because you know, that's what he ends up doing. He showed up, was very healthy. But yeah, that's a takeaway where it's like, it was watching that tournament through YouTube or NHK or, you know, whatever resources out there. Twitter had some highlights. It was so eerily quiet. With just 2 tournaments before, everyone's cheering and screaming, and this is typically what a match is like. Everyone's out there cheering. They, you know, they might throw the sabutan if there's, you know, an upset or something like that. It's the cushions that are underneath them that the fans sit on, and none of that happened. It was just really quiet. And the other thing I found interesting is that they didn't put up any padding down by the lower, like where.
It was just like.
Because it was just like the ramps, like they would normally have people sit at. But sometimes when you get thrown off a ring, the only thing stopping you could be someone.
It's a person.
Who's much smaller than you, likely. But yeah, some of these guys were being thrown off the ring, and they were running and hitting like the bars that are for like the first stand of like sitting area that was behind the people who sit on the ground in the lower pockets.
Yeah, like if you want to think about it, it's like if you ever like your school's gym in like middle school or something like that, where they have bleachers, they're not as high as those, but like the first 3 or 4 rows are kind of like that. And then from there on up, there's essentially boxes made of metal bars where you just sit. And yeah, I can't imagine being 400 pounds getting tossed off a 2 to 3 foot high pile of clay and just having forward momentum going into a set of bleachers.
Yeah. And that's, and that happened quite often. I don't think anyone was injured by it, but I'm surprised they didn't take any precautions just to make sure it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Or maybe they just didn't think the momentum would carry them that much, but there were some of them carried pretty well.
I would imagine.
Especially the first time going off there and realizing, like, oh, there's no one down here to break my fall now. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to have to be careful.
Yeah, even sometimes if they go off the side where the other wrestlers are, they'll try to, like, catch them or something. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, there's usually enough people to try to throw hands up to soften the crash.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, when there's nothing there, smash a toe here or there.
Yeah.
Of course, and that's 15 days. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like coming up short and like tearing an ACL or something like that, you know, because I mean, we see in sports all the time where somebody might be running and they just cut that, you know, cut short and they tear their ACL.
Like that's something that's always been amazing to me too, is that there's not more ACL or MCL like injuries.
Yeah. And, but when they do happen, they are pretty gruesome.
Brutal.
When you can look at them and you can clearly see that something went wrong, and I forget if it was one of those tournaments, because it was a recent memory where they did have that happen, and you know they typically will have to bring out like a wheelchair and wheel them out of there, and injuries are in sumo of you can pretty much notice them when they do happen.
Yeah, sumo injuries are usually pretty rough. They handle them very well, but
they do.
And you can definitely tell when someone's hurt, though.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if depending on the severity of the injury, they typically even just get back in, and you know they bow and they do everything formally. But there have been a few times where it's like that person's not getting back in. He needs a wheelchair immediately, and then they kind of skip the formalities to just get him out of there because clearly he's hurt.
Yeah. So despite injuries and potential of crazy injuries, Asano Yama moved up to Ozeki.
Yep.
Which was awesome. I'm always happy to see someone get up to Ozeki because it reminds me of when we started to watch sumo. Mm-hmm. And the Ozeki rank was so solid.
Yeah.
Like it was just like there was Koto Shugiku. Taruna Fuji, who I have to work on pronouncing his name properly, Goedo, who's still up there, but no longer in Ozeki.
He's retired.
He's retired. Yeah, I didn't. Yes. Right. Did he retire this tournament?
No, he retired in March.
Okay.
If I remember right.
Right.
Or it might have been May. He did retire because he got dropped down out of Ozeki because he went back to back.
Right.
Yep. You got Karuban and you have to win at least 8 to not get demoted. And mm-hmm. I think he only got 6 or 7 wins.
Yep.
And we'll see sometimes that, you know, rather than getting demoted, they'll just retire because, you know, they want to keep that honor of being at
the Ozeki. It's so hard to get up to Ozeki too.
Yes. You get one shot, which we've seen with like Tochi Noshin, who's a wrestler out of Georgia, very popular guy, where he's been dropped down into Sekiwake, and then you have one shot to get 8 wins to get back up into Ozeki immediately. And that's the thing with consistency. When we saw Koto Shugiku, Taruna Fuji, Guido, and Kasino Sato. It was like, it felt like it was like 10 years. It was that consistent.
Yeah.
It was probably from the time that I started watching in like 2014 is when I picked it up. It was like a good like 3 or 4 years probably where it was like those 4 guys consistently at the top. And then you had, you know, Hakuho, Kakaru, and Haruma Fuji. And that was your top like 6 or 7 guys.
Yeah, and they were constantly putting up at least 10 and fives. Many cases.
Yep. So you had consistency, which I think is a huge thing you're not seeing so much now. You've seen over the last couple of years.
And I'm more concerned about that with the state of sumo than I am the Yokozunas, honestly. Like obviously Hagaho is going to retire. Kakaru's probably not super far behind, but I don't think he's near there. But the Ozeki rank has been wildly unstable for years now, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely been an influx of getting in because that you know you need to win at least 33 matches over the course of 3 tournaments. So out of 45 matches, you need typically at least 33. If they need to put someone in, they might allow 31 or 32 depending on your strength of schedule. If you beat Hakuho but only had 31 wins, they might consider that to be 2 wins just because of who you beat. So they'll put you in, or if you like win a tournament and get 31 wins, you know they're semi-flexible when it comes within like a win or two, And a tournament, they'll put you into Ozeki. But yeah, getting in is hard, and then staying up there.
Staying up there is crazy hard. Yeah, it's so hard. Yeah, because if you get injured on day two,
mm-hmm.
and you pull out, that's, you know, you have 13 losses. That means you're Katoban, which means mm-hmm. you're essentially, you know, in the corner is how it literally translates. And it's, you know, you yeah. if you lose, if you don't get your 8 wins next time, you're out. Like, you have to go through the whole process of getting Ozeki again, mm-hmm. Which is a nightmare.
Yeah, and we've seen that, like I said, with Tochi Noshin, where, right. you know, he's been pretty much up and down for a while between those two ranks, where he was, you know, he'd perform well. He'd go, you know, 10-5, but then he might go 7-8, and then 7-8 again, and he mm-hmm. might get dropped down to Sekiwake, where he might have to fight his way back up into Ozeki. Yeah. So yeah, staying in Ozeki, just the consistency that was there, it was so nice. Like, you knew what you had, you knew who, like, your competition was, like, who these were the guys you were gonna beat, and they were gonna be hard.
Yeah.
Where
and you never knew which one was gonna beat Hakuho, you know what I mean? Like, it, yeah. like any of those guys could have beaten Hakuho at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So like, whereas like once the Ozeki rank kind of became a little more unstable, it was you know, what Magashira guy was going to step up and get lucky, you know?
Correct.
For a while, so.
Yeah, and it was, yeah, once again, it was just, did they happen to go on a tear, and, you know, they got their 33 wins, and they moved up. But we've seen some guys come, like, super, super close to getting that, like Endo, I feel like, has come kind of close, where, you know, he might only get 27 or 28 wins, and it's just like, you're so close. Just the difference between having just 2 or 3 more wins a tournament is the mm-hmm. difference between, you know, ending up where you are versus getting into Ozeki.
Yeah, I think Mataki Umi has come, he's brushed up against it a couple times too.
Yeah, and he's won a couple tournaments too over the last year.
Yeah.
He won in January 2019 and then again in September of 2019. And he hasn't been able to, despite being...
Yeah, despite winning twice. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, so he's also gotten really close to getting into that Ozeki rank, which everyone strives for, and then the next step is Yokozuna. But I think a lot of people, once they cross that threshold, that's when, like, they really start to clean up their act, or not even clean up their act, but like they get more technical and trying to, the, you know, the pressure's on, so they need to learn.
Yeah, I wonder how much there is there to, like, what weighs more heavily on you, just wanting to stay Ozeki or wanting to become Yokozuna?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, Yokozuna obviously has its benefits, but it comes with its own expectations.
Yeah.
But staying in as an Ozeki is incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it's like, imagine like going to work and like having a bad day, and then knowing the next, you know, in the next month you could come in, and then there could be a potential for a demotion if you had like a couple.
Yeah, yeah. It's just it's
where you're like, oh my god, like the pressure's on, where it's like, but I'm aiming to be like I want to be the VP, and you know, you might have a bad month, and it's like, oh no, am I going to get demoted now?
Yeah,
like, that's what they have to go with every day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you lose a couple in a row, you start, you know, you're like, oh crap, I got 4 losses. I mean, I can only lose, you know, 3 more, or else I'm going to, you know, get my Kachikoshi.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm going to, you know, go back down.
Yeah, that's again, why I think we both agree that's probably the most stressful rank in all of sumo. And again, like, the pace, if for those who don't know, it's, the pay is based on your rank.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, typically there's bonuses at the ends of fights, and typically higher ranked guys get better bonuses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're fighting for, you know, your livelihood, you want to stay as high as you possibly can get. So.
Correct. Yeah. And you start making money in sumo. As soon as you get into Juryo, you become a paid wrestler. It's still very minimal. And then once you get higher up in like the Makuuchi division, that's when you start making the real money, because, you know, we refer to them as fat stacks. But at the end of every match, they're typically given a stack of envelopes, and those are from sponsors that, you know, they'll put up the banners before a match, and these are all the companies that are sponsoring this match. And then the winner gets this stack. So you get your base pay, plus you get that bonus of all the advertisement that went into your match. And these are typically like highly regarded matches, where it'd be like, you know, Hakuho versus Kakaru day 15,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're going to put, you know, $5,000 on the line with advertisement money.
Yeah.
And I do want to clarify, I said Kachikoshi for demotion. It's actually Make Koshi is demotion. Kachikoshi is a promotion. Number
again,
wins.
We're not perfect.
Correct. But yeah, so they like you said, when your livelihood's on a line, you want to perform well and continue.
It's a tough rank to be in.
Yeah. It's incredibly hard.
Because I'm always curious, like, what the pay difference is between, like, a Magashira 17 to a Magashira 1. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if there's, like, you know, I mean, not that obviously it's, I wonder if it's, like, just for comparison's sakes, like a $10 jump or, like, a $45 jump, like, you know, between that section. And then once you get up to, like, Ozeki and stuff, I wonder what it becomes.
Yeah, there's a Twitter account that I actually follow it's the first time I've ever seen them do it. They actually are counting the number of envelopes that certain matches have been getting.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So he'll do like day one, and this match had the most amount of envelopes, and this, you know, day two had this amount, and it's interesting to look at the day two.
That'd be cool to kind of like. Obviously, like midweek and probably last day would probably give you the most, but.
Yeah, it will be interesting to. I'm hoping that they chart it or something like that, where it's like with the, you know, the peak money is it, yeah, is it the middle day? Is it day eight?
Middle day, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah,
you know, is it, you know, day 15 right at the end of the tournament, or is it day one? Or maybe it's just some random day when people tune in on a Friday night, or, you know, whenever people are out of work and they can actually pay attention.
Interesting. Well, there is that whole thing with, like, so the advertisers. If you watch the show, if you watch Sumo on NHK, which I believe you have to. I don't think it's broadcast anywhere else. They don't show the ads during while they're walking around.
Yep.
Because there's like the like here in America, I'm trying to think of a good comparison where it's like this network has exclusive rights to ads or vice versa or something along those lines. So basically, the ads that are being shown at the arena can't be shown on NHK.
Yep.
So they usually zoom out and they show like statistics of the fight and things like that, so you can't see them. So those ads are you know, designed for the people in attendance. I'm actually wondering how much they're actually advertising now with very little people there.
Yeah, that's why I'll be excited to see. I wish you had done it previously, where you could see, like, you know, this point last year, where the envelopes down because people aren't in person tuning in. Where more people are, you know, I don't think they've sold out of tickets. Typically, they sell out within minutes. Days are, you know, you can barely get tickets.
Yeah.
But yeah, now that people aren't going because of COVID, you know, it's only 25% capacity at the Kokugikan, so there's less people in attendance, so maybe less sponsor money.
I'm going to assume there's probably going to be less, but yeah, no, we'll see as, like, the week goes on. Like, because usually in the beginning, there's not a ton anyway. Maybe on day one, but... And even then, it's like the last couple of fights.
Yeah. Usually day one, like, because it just starts on a Sunday, and that's when everyone has the day off. Day ones are typically busy. And even yesterday at 25% capacity, I still felt like it was kind of empty, even at 25. Reasonably so.
To look like just not see anyone sitting next to the ring or anything like that.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't think I saw anyone that close. So I think it might just be where, like, the bleachers begin.
Yeah, I think that's where it is, yeah. But, yeah, that brings us into May, where there wasn't a Basho.
that was strange, because the last time it was canceled, I believe, was 2013, and I want to say it was for the earthquake. So it's very seldom that a tournament actually gets canceled, and I think even prior to that, it was like World War II was the last time a tournament was canceled, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, they canceled all the exhibitions in between.
Yep. Too. So, yeah. I mean, and once again, rightfully so, you know, trying to limit this, and I'm just glad that now in July that there was some, but yeah, May was weird, you know, having it be an odd month and having there just be no sumo coverage.
I watched, again, I'm going to reference NHK because they're doing an awesome job at kind of, they're providing coverage to people outside of Japan. This is all in English too, by the way, so it's not like you have to know any Japanese or anything to figure this out. They have a team now that they didn't have when we first started watching.
Correct.
Just dedicated to you know, translating, or not even translating, just covering sumo in English.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of things that were there. Were in place. Like, there was no media, or media access was limited, which it's always been pretty limited, I feel like, at least from our experience, from what we've been told.
I think it was, I think, like, a lot of the time they'd be, like, maybe in the tunnel, like taking photos if they had just won, or they, you know, they would be around for interviews. But I think in May, you know, with it being canceled, March was very limited. They put strict guidelines in place. They made sure, you know, everyone's temperature was being taken. If you tested over, I forget if it was like 100 degrees, you know, or even over like 99, they sent you away and you couldn't come in as a media member. Same thing with a wrestler. If you tested positive or did a temperature, you'd have to pull out of your match, potentially the tournament, depending on how bad it was, cancel the tournament. But in the safety of everybody, they just straight up canceled May.
Yeah, it's and yeah, and there was so they're off. You got to take your temperature every morning and evening to make sure you weren't sick, which I would expect, I suppose. Yeah. But some of the things that caught me as something that would maybe detrimental is you couldn't talk while you were eating. So they would sit in circles. They NHK was showing videos, like they would sit together, but they just wouldn't talk.
Yeah.
And you couldn't do any physical contact while wrestling until June.
Yeah.
So you had the whole month of May where you couldn't even really practice.
Yeah. I think a lot of the practice they did do was it was like lower body. Some of the videos I saw it was ridiculous what they were doing in order to, you know, they had to pretty much change up their training regimen before it was, you know, we're just going to keep fighting and practice and practice. And it was like, okay, now we're going to go from like this more technical training to, we're just going to try and put weight on, take weight off. We're going to try and like maintain where our body's at rather than, you know, fighting someone. And yeah, like you said, I think that just got lifted in June, where they could start having more contact, and that was even within the same stable.
That was the other thing, is like, so now you get into June and you're looking to challenge yourself a little bit, and you can't fight anybody outside your own stable.
Yeah,
it's going to be a detriment to a lot of other fighters than, you know, but like, because for those who aren't familiar, you know, in sumo, you even when you're in a tournament, you can only fight those not in your house or stable, as it's referred to as. In this case, they forced you to fight people within your own stable, which is obviously detrimental. I can't imagine that was helpful.
No, because you don't. Because you live together, you're with each other all the time, and you know each other's weaknesses and strengths. Where you, like, you know, if Kota Shokiku is going up against, you know, Kota Yuki or Kota Weiko, like, he's going to know their weakness day in and day out. Like, you know, he's not going to get that fresh person. Like, okay, now I'm going up against, you know, Chiyomaru, for example, and we'll go over to his stable. We're going to fight, and we'll see what the results are. And then you'll get coached into what was the correct thing, what was wrong. But yeah, in your own house, you'll pretty much seeing your same guys every single day.
I think that's the thought process behind why you don't fight them in a live tournament. Yeah.
So. Correct. Yeah. It's because you practice with them. And the other thing is, and this is probably a given, is you don't want like Kodo Shoho to toss a match for Kodo Shogun.
Oh yeah.
It's like, oh, you're my brother. We're family. And like, you don't want him to toss it, but they wouldn't. I couldn't imagine they would do that, but I think, there's a lot that probably goes into their decision making with, you know, we don't want people who are familiar with each other to fight each other, despite, you know, like Kakuho might fight the same guy between tournaments all the time and then get into a tournament and fight him, but it's not the same as fighting someone in your own family.
Yeah, and I think like that, even like fighting, so if, you know, Kakuho was going to Kota Shigiku and fighting him all the time, like, you would think, you know, it's probably better that I just beat this guy than throw this match, since I know how to beat him. You know what I mean?
Correct.
Like, at least puts that like kind of thought in your mind, instead of just we fight together. It's all for the house. I'll throw this fight.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think performing as a house as a whole and being very successful, they all want to perform well. And represent the.
I agree. Nobody wants to. No one wants to perform poorly. But yeah, like, you got to think that gives the fact that you can only fight members of your own house during this kind of quarantine, we'll call it. You got to think that gives advantage to certain houses.
That potentially have
more people in the upper ranks.
Yeah, those who have, and yes, that would be go back to your point of the, you know, Sadagatake stable where the Kodo family are from. They have five people who are actually in the July tournament. Kota Shoho is the new one. He just won Juryo last tournament, which would have been May or March. So he's up in the division now too. So you have five of the same guys who are within like four ranks of each other, mm-hmm. Which makes things interesting because typically like a Magashira's 17 would probably fight a 16. The only problem is the other 16 is a stablemate. And I think they actually have someone like 17, 16, 15, and 13 or something like that. So they're all pretty close where they're going to have to end up fighting someone who's like a little bit higher than the typical, you know, I'm going to fight two Magashira 16s. Well, probably not because all your stablemates are in the same area as you.
Yeah.
And, you know, the bottom of the division is interesting besides just the Sadagatake stable having that many guys, but there's a lot of former Ozeki that are down there too.
Mm-hmm. Four.
Kotoshigiku, obviously. Tara Nofuji, who's battled back from injuries and diabetes. You know, he was probably the next up and coming thing. You know, he was making his way up and just due to some injuries, due to his health, he dropped down. I believe he went all the way down to Sadanme, which is the third division.
Yeah, to think like put that in kind of perspective here for those who know like baseball and stuff like that. That's like being sent down from the major leagues all the way down to like AAA.
Single A.
Probably AA, single A, maybe even.
Yeah.
He went that low.
Yeah. And so now he has to fight his way all the way back up to this prestige rank of Ozeki. But so he's at 17, I think, right now.
Yeah. And it's not like he can just, you know, get a decent record and move up. He's got to win, you know, he's got to go 11-0 or however many fights they're doing in that division.
Yeah,
if he wants to move up quickly through those ranks, because they hold the same standards in all the lower ranks too. You can't, you know, if you're fighting, they fight less. Granted, it's not they don't typically until you get up to Juryo. I don't think they do 15 days.
Correct. I think Sadane is every other day, so they do eight matches. Then before that, it's like every third day for five or six matches a tournament.
Yeah, so you need to put up like 7-1s. If you're going to want to move up in those ranks. So it's not like he can just get moved up because of his previous performances.
Yeah. I think he will perform well because I think he was only in Juryo for two tournaments and he won one of them. And I think he was runner up for the last one or a third. So I expect him to perform well. And he was even quoted after his day one fight. He said he felt no difference.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's cockiness. I don't know if that's just, you know, maybe he just didn't feel anything. It's no different. He's just going out there and performing sumo. And, you know, that's just the way of taking the expectation off his back. Like, you know, it's no big deal. It is what it is. You know, I didn't feel any difference.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, he's down there. You have Takeyasu, who we mentioned earlier. He was injured. He had a huge drop as well.
Yeah, Takeyasu was I thought he was going to be one of the next consistent Ozeki.
Yeah, and I did too because he fought. So he was a stablemate with Kasino Sato. So having the experience of Kasino Sato in your stable for so long, having him with Ozeki, then eventually get up to Yokozuna. Takeyasu I looked at and had high expectations, and maybe he gets back. But I know with his he tore a muscle in his elbow, so. It could be psychological with him where he's concerned about re-injuring it. So he's going to take things a little slow.
Again, a huge mental game. I feel like it's not just physical with this. And I think that's something that's easily overlooked. Because if you watch one or two fights of sumo, you'll notice people are bandaged up and taped up. It's tough, I think, to get over some of those injuries. And like, I mean, again, being up that high with like, you know, so much weight behind you. There's got to be, I'm assuming if you're doing it your entire life, you get over it eventually. But, I don't know. I just feel like in my own head, I don't want to get toppled over, you know, and if I tore my ACL last time I fell, like that's going to make me, you know, edge a little farther away from, you know, the outer part of the ring a little bit more than I would normally.
Yeah. And you can see, you can definitely tell when they've had some kind of injury, whether it's the amount of tape they have or, you know, they're obviously favoring it. But like Tochinoshin, another former Ozeki who's now in the lower ranked, he's had bad knees recently, and he has like, it almost looks like a cement block sometimes around his knee.
Yeah. It's like a full cast.
Yeah. It's times, yeah, like a full cast around his, right around his kneecap where I'm like, how do you move with that thing on? And so he's another one to keep an eye on this tournament just because you know, is he, could he potentially retire? He was,
what rank is he at right now?
I believe he's Magashira 10.
Yeah, so he's middle of the pack-ish.
Yeah, so he's, I mean, he...
Yeah, he's 11 actually right now, yeah.
So his competition will be, he should beat most of the people that he goes up against, but once again, he's also going to be affected by that mixture of former Ozeki down there, you know, with, and some of the young guys are doing exceptionally well. Like I said, Koto Shoho won Juryo, Koto Nowaka won Juryo back in January. So you have some recent Juryo winners that, you know, Tochi Noshin's, you know, great.
He's more than capable of beating all of these guys, yes. But is he physically able to, you know?
Correct.
Like that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, he's very scary strong too.
Yeah, right? He's scary strong. He's like one of the few that you'll see just literally pick up and carry out, and it doesn't matter how much they weigh.
Yep.
I've seen him pick up guys that look to be around 250, 300, and I've seen him pick up guys that are 400 pounds.
Yeah. Like he's picked up like Ichinojo before. He's done it to Oyama, like those are some of the heavier individuals.
Reminds me of back in the day, like the old like WWF. I don't know. You might be too young for this. I might be showing my age here a little bit. But like when Yokozuna the wrestler would fight, and like Lex Luthor or whoever would come out, and like not Lex Luthor, it's not him. Like I don't know, like Hulk Hogan or something would like body slam him. Like that's kind of what I picture with Tochi Noshin. Like it's just like. You're kind of like, oh my god, this guy is picking up this other guy who's three times his size. Like,
yeah, we had I think my generation of wrestling, we had Rikishi, which
right Rikishi, yeah.
So we had Rikishi, and yeah, it was be the same thing. Like The Rock would come out and pick this guy up, and it's like, how are you doing that? But Tochi Noshin just does that. Like he's like, I'm just gonna pick you up.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Let's like, just say this. Stop the pushing. You know, I'm just gonna pick you up and bring you out.
Yep. He's just, yeah, it's out of nowhere. You're just like, okay, now I'm done. Yeah. It's weird. I'm not able to tell where he gets that grip from, but
yeah, it's essentially like a deadlift where it's like, all right, I'm just going to pick this up now and just move you out of the ring. And yeah, it just comes out of nowhere. If he gets a good grip in there, he's probably going to pick you up, especially if he gets it over you and he'll just carry you out.
Yeah.
And I think there's a video of him doing that to Enho. Mm. He's like 5'2" while
doing it. Enho's smallest Rikishi right now?
Rikishi, I believe so. Yeah. He might be tied with somebody else, but yeah, he's
at least in height, I think he's the smallest.
Yeah. He's like 5'2" I think in that range. So he's pretty small and he's definitely underweight is the weight classes obviously, but yeah, he's a small guy, very technical, very quick. You can like get your legs and sweep out from underneath you and he's very technical, but yeah, like I'm pretty sure there's a video of Tochi Noshin just picking him up. And just like, I'm just gonna take care of this. I'm gonna do the touchy eye, and then I'm just gonna, you know, pick you up and put you outside the ring because I know this is gonna be over real quick.
Yeah, yeah, and like, so we've talked about the older guys in there. It's kind of like where it's funny that we say older guys and we haven't watched sumo that long, but it's like that's how you age. It seems in sumo, it's like once you hit your 30s, it's all downhill from there.
Yeah, but, I would definitely say Hakuho
is obviously there's several others that are contrary to that, but I mean it's the very demanding sport, and it's but like there's the younger guys coming up like Enho, who we've been talking about a little bit, and guys like Abi, who are just like he's up in where is he now? Magashira 4.
Mm-hmm.
Or, nope, excuse me, 5. He's
bounced around quite a bit too.
Yeah, he's bounced around a bunch.
He's very, very long. He's got very long legs, which I think he's good at like a pusher. He uses his long legs to kind of create that distance between him and his opponent. But yeah, I think when he's hit those higher ranks, that's when he's faced the tougher competition. And I don't know if he's ready to hang yet.
He was Komusubi, rather. July, September, November, and January, which is more than I thought.
Yeah, no, he was there for.
So he hung for a while, but then once January didn't perform very well, and not awful, but got put down in Magashira 4, and then March, obviously, with things being weird, I wouldn't expect too much, but he dropped another rank down to 5. So, but he's another one who's had potential.
I mean
Mataki Umi too. Sorry, go ahead.
I was gonna say, Mataki Umi, I think I mentioned in the intro, if you want to go back and check it out. He's one of my favorites, and it kills me because he's also really good, but he's once again one of those inconsistent individuals. I think his has also been injuries, where he's young, he could be that next generation of you know, a champion. He's only 28, and he's won two tournaments. So in an age where, you know, Hakuho is reigning supreme and you can get a couple tournament wins, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Takeyomi's another young guy, but yeah, like
Hokuto Fuji's another one that I'm just kind of looking at now. Like, he's been up and down a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, July going back to last year, he was 9-6, September 9-6, November 7-8, so losing record. Then mm-hmm. jumped back up at Magashira 2. So yeah, he went Magashira 1, Magashira 1, Komusubi for getting the 9-6 records. Then didn't perform well, got a 7-8 at Komusubi. Then went to Magashira 2, got 11-4, went back up to Komusubi, then went 4-11,
mm-hmm.
and got dropped down to Magashira 5 for this tournament.
Yep.
So there's a lot of that. Like, again, we mentioned consistency earlier with the Ozeki rank.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you didn't really, I don't feel like you saw that as much 5-6 years ago.
No. I think
this is kind of a new thing now with Hakuho finally kind of starting to waver. You know, a little bit of a changing of the guard, so to speak, waiting to see what the next, you know, sumo can bring.
Yeah, and I don't know if we haven't seen that person yet because Hakuho is just still so dominant.
Yeah.
Or if it's because there's not necessarily like a mixed bag, but everyone performs well when they want to or when they just get in the zone, and they go on a tear. There are some young guys who I'm like very, very hopeful that perform well. Like I said, like I want Takeyomi to do well. I'd love to see Enho. He wrestles with Hakuho, isn't they're in the same stable. And I'd love to see Enho just because he has the Harumi Fuji build, where he's a little bit shorter, you know, but even Harumi Fuji wasn't that short. But he's got like that short, stocky, you know, muscle kind of build.
Harumi Fuji was pretty tactical too.
He was very tactical.
Enho reminds me a lot of Harumi Fuji as well. Yeah.
Yeah. I see a lot of that when I see Enho's matches. But yeah, I think his problem will just be his height, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I think people might pick up on his, you know, most of the time he's probably gonna go low, just because that's the quickest point that he can reach. Yeah. Or if he gets behind you, that might be another thing where he hits you, but then he bounces off and like gets behind you real quick and kind of starts, you know, pushing you out.
Yeah. And to kind of fill people in on Harumi Fuji, Harumi Fuji will be its own episode.
Yeah.
That was
because we were
actually in Japan.
Yeah,
I think we saw one of his last fights.
We did see his last fight, I believe. Yeah, it was day two of November 2017.
Yeah, so that was its own. That's a debacle and some sumo drama that we can we'll save that for an off month for sure.
Yeah,
and we can go into the whole Harumi Fuji thing, and I love making the comparison of that incident to things that would happen in America or even Europe, I feel like.
Yeah.
And how like that all went down. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, that'll be a good future episode, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that'll be a good episode, especially since we were there live when it was happening.
Yeah.
Well, not the incident, but the last match and kind of seeing how the media took it and ran with
it. Yeah, watching the media blow up about it was crazy. Because that was like sumo when we first started watching, I think, was kind of on a bit. It was on, I wouldn't say it was on a downswing, but it was just kind of recovering from
Yeah, it was like a flatlining kind of, it was on the way down, but it wasn't, you know, going down. It was just like it had its peak, came down, like, and it kind of just sat there for a while.
Yeah, it was there, and people knew about it, but nobody was, like, I don't think it was selling out when I first started watching.
Yeah, I think, yeah, over the last handful of years, obviously their target audience is to try and get the younger folks involved, where I think a lot of it is still dominated by the older generation, but there are still they need to get the young fan base, and I think that's probably what we've seen over the last couple of years is that resurgence of sumo, especially with, you know, Kota Shigeki who broke down the wall of Japanese Rikishi not winning in 10 years. So now we've seen a handful of Japanese wrestlers win when before it was always Mongolian.
Yeah.
which is Hakuho, Kakaru, Haruma Fuji, you know, most of the champions before, they're all Mongolian. So, but yeah, over the last like 4 years, we've seen a resurgence in, I think, Japanese youth interest, as well as a resurgence of the Japanese Rikishi winning in general.
Yeah, it's,
they probably go hand in hand.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So to wrap this up, I was thinking maybe, and I'm just kind of throwing this at you. We didn't talk about this before, but like, what do you, what's your hot take? What's your sumo hot take? Who do you think is gonna come away from this one? I mean, Hakuho is obviously doing Hakuho business right now. But what do you think? Like, who's your underdog? This one that you think could randomly take this one?
See, I'm always so biased. Far, I mean,
we've only gone 2 days, so it's kind of hard to tell. But
yeah, I'm always so biased because I want to cheer for everybody in the Sadagatake stable. Kotoshikiku be my first like big fan interest.
Obviously, yeah, I'd go Kotoshikiku, obviously. Yeah, first like, pick.
Well, I mean, but realistically, I mean, I'd like to see like Kotoshoho having won Juryo. He's at Magashira 15, so maybe he pulls a Tokushoru and he wins 14 matches. But once again, it means he's going to have to beat Hakuho unless Hakuho pulls out.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if, you know, spoiler, once again, if anyone hasn't seen day two, give you a couple seconds. Yeah. Kakaru is pulled out.
So, so that's a big deal. Yeah.
So now it's like a half asterisk where you're like, well, Kakaru is not there. So you're only facing one Yokozuna. So he's only pulled out for day two. I haven't heard anything that's extended beyond that.
Yeah, he could come back, but
correct. Yeah, you can always pull out and then come back. It's you know, it's not a I pull out once and it's out for the rest of the tournament. So he could come back in a couple of days, or just, you know, you want to skip day two because his foot was sore and he, you know, is coming back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd like to see Kotoshoho. You know, Koto Nowaka, I'd like to see both those guys do very well, being young.
Kotoshoho is the youngest Rikishi too, it turns out.
Which is terrifying because, so he was born 1999. That means like even here in the States, like we're getting like NHL, like these young guys who are born in the 2000s now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. Like I know I'm, you know, late 20s, but like, I still feel like now that I'm seeing future athletes in the 2000s performing at this level, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah,
like we're now entering my life. Yeah, we're now entering the next, you know, century of future athlete.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But yeah, so he's 1999, by far the youngest, and he's climbed his way like really quickly through the ranks. So I'd like
to see he's well cruising.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think if I had to pick one person.
I mean, maybe not necessarily to win. You know what I mean? Just who
I think would perform well.
Surprisingly well, or even if you would want to perform well,
you know, I'll go with Asano Yama.
He just got
into Ozeki, so
I was gonna say that too, actually.
For consistency's sake, because he won the tournament back in Fukuoka, so November 2019. He put up 10 wins in January and then 11 in March, so he actually had that. He had 32 wins, but because of that tournament, I think they gave him that 33 win threshold, and they needed another Ozeki. Because another weird thing about March, and the Banzuke actually reflects this, and I don't think this, it's been very, very long time since this, they had a Yokozeki where Kakaru played the role of both an Ozeki and a Yokozuna in the Banzuke in order to balance out the Banzuke. So he was technically ranked as both of those. I think he still keeps the title of Yokozuna. Obviously, he didn't get demoted or anything. But yeah, sometimes when they need that extra Ozeki in there, you know, they do it. And he's put up, you know, four tournaments in a row. Five of the last six, he's put up double digits. So yeah, I'd love for him to perform well, and I want consistency in Ozeki rank. I think that's what I want. Like, if I had one wish, is I want consistency. I want stability in the top ranks.
Yeah, so, I want four Ozekis back up there, just killing it. That was so cool.
Yeah, I think we've seen three, maybe, because I think the last like group that was kind of together for a little while was Tochinoshin, Takayasu, and Guido. So retired and then two demoted. So
I think I totally blanked on Guido retiring. That's That was, I feel like I blanked because that was so sudden, but
it was, yeah. I don't think people were expecting it because he's always been like that average, you know, 8-7, 9-6, 10-5 wrestler. You know,
and they were talking about Yokozuna potential for him for a while too.
Yeah. Like, I think a lot of people were caught off guard. I think generally just what I've seen on Twitter and other social media platforms, a lot of people were like, wow, Guido's retiring. And it's not even like he went, 1-14 and had an injury. He just got demoted, didn't want to go down into, Sekiwake, and then fight his way back up. So,
yeah.
But,
it's part of the Fab Four. That's all I'm going to call it.
It might as well be the Fab Four. So I guess what would be your hot takes? Who do you want to see perform well? You don't have to give a prediction because it's hard for just day two.
I want to see Takayumi. I think I really want to see him do well. I want him to come away with like an 11-4 or something and start pushing Ozeki again.
Yeah.
I think he's got the potential to be a consistent Ozeki if he can stay healthy. So I think, seeing him up in Ozeki would be awesome. I don't necessarily need, it would be cool to see him win again, obviously, but I think for consistency's sake, he would be great up there. I'm always pulling for Enho. I think Enho's super entertaining to watch. Spoilers. He lost day one.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing too with him though, is like if he gets in a bad spot, he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And he just got tossed to the ground in his fight on day one, and I was like, that's what you need to do with him.
Yeah,
it's just
like you almost know he's gonna go low, so then you can kind of like, you don't want to overcompensate because he's like I said, he's very technical, so he trains under Hakuho, who's a freak of nature when it comes to just doing something different on the spot.
Yeah.
If you can just get in there early and then just cut him down and be like, yep, this is what I've seen guys almost sit on top of him. Just like put their full force of their weight down. I'm like, how did you not tear something there with that amount of weight coming down on you?
Yeah.
I think that happened in March where someone came down on him. I was like, wow, okay, you walked away. I'm surprised.
Yeah. It's crazy how much he can take for punishment. Mm-hmm. It's pretty ridiculous. But I think other than that, and Enho, see if Enho can get back, or not Enho, excuse me, Endo, can get back up to those upper ranks. Cause he was Komisubi, in March, and was only 7-8. And I think he's been kind of like, we've obviously had our eye on him for a while, long before we decided to do this, but he's always been a fan favorite.
And yeah.
I think in the time that we've been watching him since last July, again, just kind of looking, he was Magashira 2, Komisubi, Komisubi, Magashira 1, Komisubi, Magashira 1. So, like, he's, like, right, he's teetering there, too.
Mm-hmm.
He's done the dance. He's growing up
a little bit. And the hard thing is getting 10 wins is surprisingly hard. So, like, the expectation that you're really supposed to get 11 to get into Ozeki over three tournaments, that's pretty hard. That means you can only lose four matches in the 15 days.
Yeah, the best way, like we've talked about it before too, is to think about it. You got to assume that, as a wrestler, you don't assume this, but as a fan, you assume he's probably going to lose to both the Yokozuna.
Mm-hmm.
So if the Yokozuna are there, so that means you got 13 matches to work with.
Yeah,
and you, everyone you lose to someone ranked lower than you is just going to make that harder.
Yep.
I think that's one of the hardest things to do in sumo is make sure you're beating the people you should beat.
There's a great example here is like the Patriots losing to the Dolphins. It's like, how like you're only hurting yourself by running a trick play or not punting it out of bounds or doing some stupid play where it's like that's going to hurt you in the long run.
It almost gets you almost get in your own head, really.
Correct.
When every match matters, knowing that you're probably, that there's a good chance you're going to, like, you're probably going to lose to Hakuho. I feel like Hakuho, every wrestler has to safely assume that.
Yeah, Hakuho is almost, I would almost put it at 100% guarantee that you're going to lose. I'll put it at 99 because nobody's perfect. Yeah. But yeah, like there's a chance that you could be Kakaru. Spoiler.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Endo did. He beat Kakaru on day one.
Yep.
So, luckily that if that was a loss, you're already looking at, oh, like, crap, I've already lost one. I got to fight Hakuho. That's at least two losses. And like you said, now you have 13 matches. You can only lose, you know, if you're looking for Ozeki, maybe two or three of them.
Yeah, if you're looking for Ozeki too, yeah, that's another thing.
But yeah, then if you're looking, get 11. Yeah, and if you're looking for just eight wins, that means you have, you know, the next 13 days, you can only lose five. So, yeah, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was, those are my picks, I think, going into the next few days here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'll be interesting to see how things play out going into the day eight.
Yeah.
With Kakeru out, I think that's going to make things a little more interesting, like it always does when a Yokozuna drops.
And I think, between like 8 and 10, day 8 to 10, you kind of can start seeing a leaderboard. You'll kind of know who's really in of it, who's in and who's out. I'd almost consider anyone who has four losses to almost be out 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Typically, it's three or less losses get you a tournament, but there have been those tournaments where, like, Hakuho is not part of it, that someone goes 11-4, or maybe a 10-5, that gets you a tournament win.
Yeah.
But typically, it's three losses or less, you're in the hunt for the cup.
Yeah. Cool. Well,
we can
wrap this up here. I think we got a pretty good recap of what's going on, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the Bassero for sure. And again, I'm just looking for consistency at the top.
Yeah, I think that's my one big wish is consistency. If nothing else, I just want to see Takakesho and Asunayama do well. Takayomi Shodai, those guys, just stick where they are, create some kind of foundation for the top of the division, and then we can figure out whoever wants to insert themselves into Magashira.
I agree. Cool. Well, thanks everybody for listening. You can find new episodes at supersumerbrothers.com, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.